You're listening to KPPP LPFM. We're broadcasting online through live365.com and soon to be found on your radio dial at FM 88.1, adding local color to your airwaves. This is Duke Gomez-Shemp, and tonight we're going to spend a little time on some interviews that were held in April of 2014. The story is about the UND logo, and this specific podcast is about the real story behind the UND sorority scandal of April 2014. The UND logo issue continues to surface in North Dakota, even though the NCAA has successfully convinced UND to banish their racist Native mascot. Politicians, alums, and logo fans have continued to try to resurface this racist Native mascot for UND, and they believe they can make the university revive their derogatory mascot. The logo committee at UND has spent time and resources to develop 5 mascot options and will make a selection for UND for their new mascot. However, a past mayor of Bismarck, North Dakota, took 3 of those names and trademarked them in an effort to prevent UND from naming a new mascot. This old mayor, his intention is to keep the old racist mascot of the past. Native voices have been loud and point on this issue. In an effort to make Native people's voice heard, we're playing some interviews at KPPP LPFM Radio, recorded in April 2014. In April of last year, a pink banner was placed by the Gamma Phi Beta sorority sisters outside their door, which read, "You can take away our mascot, but you can't take away our pride." The Gamma Phi Beta sorority building neighbors the American Indian Center at UND campus, and the banner's placement took place during Time Out Week, a 44-year tradition. It would be 45, except it had to be canceled 1 year. It started an effort to educate non-Native students about Native American lives, issues, and struggles. The point of Time Out Week, in many senses, is to bring non-Native and Native American students closer together to heal some of the tensions that have existed for decades on UND's campus, particularly those who are related to the mascot logo. What wasn't being heard in the media were the voices of Native Americans affected directly by this issue. That's why in April of 2014, KPPPLP Radio interviewed Chase Iron Eyes, Amber Finley, Danny Miller, and Jordan Brien. Even though these interviews were done in April of 2014, the perspectives of Indigenous people directly affected by the issues need to be heard. For the next hour and a half, you'll hear Native people's perspectives around the Gamma Phi Beta sorority sisters, the placement of their sign, and other perspectives that help pull this so-called logo debate into perspective. Have a listen.
Jordan Breen is a Native American hip-hop artist, and he's an enrolled member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewas. He's been using his voice to tackle issues of gun violence, suicide, alcoholism. You know, he speaks for students. I have Chase Iron Eyes. He is the founder of Last Real Indians. He is a Lakota Sioux from Standing Rock Nation. He's also an attorney, an activist, a speaker, a scholar, and a spiritual economy revitalizer. Thank you for being on this podcast with me today. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about this important issue. So let me start out by asking you some questions. We're talking today about the topic of the UND sorority, Gamma Phi Beta, and the banner that was placed outside on the door, which is incidentally next door to the Native American Association. And this all occurred during Time Out Week. Danny, who I've already interviewed, talked about the fact that this is a very important week because it really helps Native Americans express all of the different issues that they're struggling with. And so I'll start off by asking you one of the things, and I'll start with you, Chase, because I was looking at the PowerPoint presentation that you put together along with some other students, alum of UND, on the history of the Fighting Sioux logo and mascot. And, you know, given the background that you know so well about this logo and mascot, could you talk a little bit about why people in the Native American community are upset by this banner because it is being said that it's not even directed toward Native Americans. It's being directed toward the NCAA.
Well, I mean, I have been involved since 1997. That's when I was a sophomore at the University of North Dakota. And if you're a Native person or identifiably Native, you know, if people kind of can tell that you're Native either by, you know, some of the your long hair or your skin tone or your red accent or how you identify yourself, maybe. I know Natives that, you know.
You're listening to KPPP LPFM. We're broadcasting online through live365.com and soon to be found on your radio dial at FM 88.1, adding local color to your airwaves. This is Duke Gomez-Shemp, and tonight we're going to spend a little time on some interviews that were held in April of 2014. The story is about the UND logo, and this specific podcast is about the real story behind the UND sorority scandal of April 2014. The UND logo issue continues to surface in North Dakota, even though the NCAA has successfully convinced UND to banish their racist Native mascot. Politicians, alums, and logo fans have continued to try to resurface this racist Native mascot for UND, and they believe they can make the university revive their derogatory mascot. The logo committee at UND has spent time and resources to develop 5 mascot options and will make a selection for UND for their new mascot. However, recently a past mayor of Bismarck, North Dakota, took 3 of those names and trademarked them in an effort to prevent UND from naming a new mascot. This old mayor, his intention is to keep the old racist mascot of the past. Native voices have been loud and point on this issue. In an effort to make Native people's voice heard, we're playing some interviews at KPPP LPFM Radio, recorded in April 2014. In April of last year, a pink banner was placed by the Gamma Phi Beta sorority sisters outside their door, which read, "You can take away our mascot, but you can't take away our pride." The Gamma Phi Beta sorority building neighbors the American Indian Center at UND campus, and the banner's placement took place during Time Out Week, a 44-year tradition. It would be 45, except it had to be canceled 1 year. It started an effort to educate non-Native students about Native American lives, issues, and struggles. The point of Time Out Week, in many senses, is to bring non-Native and Native American students closer together to heal some of the tensions that have existed for decades on UND's campus, particularly those who are related to the mascot logo. What wasn't being heard in the media were the voices of Native Americans affected directly by this issue. That's why in April of 2014, KPPPLP Radio interviewed Chase Iron Eyes, Amber Finley, Danny Miller, and Jordan Brian. Even though these interviews were done in April of 2014, the perspectives of Indigenous people directly affected by the issues need to be heard. For the next hour and a half, you'll hear Native people's perspectives around the Gamma Phi Beta sorority sisters, the placement of their sign, and other perspectives that help pull this so-called logo debate into perspective. Have a listen.
Jordan Breen is a Native American hip-hop artist, and he's an enrolled member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewas. He's been using his voice to tackle issues of gun violence, suicide, alcoholism. You know, he speaks for students. I have Chase Iron Eyes. He is the founder of Last Real Indians. He is a Lakota Sioux from Standing Rock Nation. He's also an attorney, an activist, a speaker, a scholar, and a spiritual economy revitalizer. Thank you for being on this podcast with me today. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about this important issue. So let me start out by asking you some questions. We're talking today about the topic of the UND sorority, Gamma Phi Beta, and the banner that was placed outside on the door, which is incidentally next door to the Native American Association. And this all occurred during Time Out Week. Danny, who I've already interviewed, talked about the fact that this is a very important week because it really helps Native Americans express all of the different issues that that they're struggling with. And so I'll start off by asking you one of the things, and I'll start with you, Chase, because I was looking at the PowerPoint presentation that you put together along with some other students, alum of UND, on the history of the Fighting Sioux logo and mascot. And, you know, given the background that you know so well about this logo and mascot, could you talk a little bit about why people in the Native American community are upset by this banner, because it is being said that it's not even directed toward Native Americans, it's being directed toward the NCAA.
Well, I have been involved since 1997. That's when I was a sophomore at the University of North Dakota. And if you're a Native person or identifiably Native, you know, if people kind of can tell that you're Native either by, you know, some of the your long hair or your skin tone or your red accent or how you identify yourself, maybe. Because I know Natives that, you know, in this society, they can go to UND and they don't catch any of the backlash or the stereotyping or the when you go to UND, when I went, you had to have an opinion on the Fighting Sioux, whether you wanted to or not, because I didn't know anything about the Fighting Sioux mascot debate until I was in a class, and I was asked, since I was Indian, I was Native, what my opinion was on UND's use of the Fighting Sioux name or mascot. And I explained that I didn't really have an opinion on the matter, but it wasn't long after that I would, you know, do my own research and kind of form one. But there's a 40-year history at UND of Indian students organizing. Every time they go there, they organize and they realize what's going on, that the use of Native American people in this arena as mascots or nicknames, sports team nicknames, is nothing but problems, nothing but trouble. I mean, it's an objectification, and on this real intellectual level, there's something completely and inherently wrong going on. There's an attempted usurpation of our identity, our really our spirit. There's something crazy that they're attempting to effectuate here, and that is to displace our own identity, so that we don't live our identity anymore. We look at it through a lens, through a Hollywood lens, a lens that we didn't create, a lens that we don't control. This stuff, it goes deep. You can go deep into the rabbit hole on this stuff, and for some people, it's enough to say that it's stereotypical, and that's fine. But what Gamma Phi Beta can't do is put a banner like this out during timeout week across from the Indian Center and not expect Natives to take it that it's directed at us. Maybe it was directed at the NCAA, but an objective person could look at that and interpret the same thing that is directed at Native Americans during timeout week. When I don't know another week or another non-Indian cultural event that brings in as much or as many visitors and as much economic impact as the powwow does. There's thousands of people that come into Grand Forks and millions of dollars. That's not counting the amount of money that Indian students bring into the university. That is definitely in the multi-million dollars, the amount of grant money that comes in because of the Indians into medical programs. There's other programs. Maybe Amber might be able to fill us in on some of that, because I know she works with she's working with North Star Counselors, and she works with a colleague of mine named Twyla Baker Demaray, and she might have a better handle on that, and, you know, on how much money is actually coming into the university system based solely on Native American students and populations that UND is supposed to serve. And so there's a history here. And I remember when we were fighting to to change the mascot or have him drop using the name of Fighting Sioux, we had to go through a lot. Some of our fellow students received, you know, death threats. Their car windows were smashed in. A couple of them got physically assaulted. They got jumped. And all along the way, people sort of make they're not threats, but when a colonized person sees somebody of their own kind trying to sort of push back or even liberate their own selves and maybe even make things better for their own children, they're scared of it, and they tell you and they warn you about the potential backlash in hopes that it will kind of plant a little bit of a seed of fear so that maybe you'll change your course of action. And that's what I see happening on that campus still, is that people are trying to perform these little microaggressions or however they want to term it, but it's a little bit of a jab. It's putting out in public, they can take our mascot, they're asserting ownership over our image when they use the word our to show ownership. They can take our mascot, but they can't take our pride. And I was extremely offended because Gamma Phi Beta is the same sorority that in 2008 hosted a Cowboys and Indians themed party. That was the theme of the party. Usually, you know, somebody will throw a Halloween party and maybe somebody's going to show up as Pocahontas and they're going to cause a conflict if there's natives there. I've been to parties, and I have friends who've been to parties where that stuff causes a conflict because we just deal with it right there. I mean, the headdress is coming off or whatever it is something's going to happen. But these guys, Gamma Phi Beta, felt it appropriate to theme the party and invite and promote people to dress up as Indian Braves or Pocahontas. And I don't know what's going on with that sorority, but I know in the paper President Kelly sort of condemned them for what they've done. And I don't know if it was the journalist or President Kelly, but one of them made the statement that the girls that did it in 2008 are no longer there, so this is a whole new group of girls. And for me, that just made me question, well, what is really being promoted at this sorority, or what is actually happening that the same sort of offensive events are allowed to take place in that time span? I mean, I graduated from UND, and I 100% respect UND, and I'm proud of UND. But I've been through the ringers there, and I know some of the issues that we face there. And when I went to UND, it was the first time I had been off the res, and I saw a bunch of white people. I saw white people. I saw the race of white people, just like they saw me and they saw an Indian. But I grew out of that sort of that paradigm, that worldview, and I evolved into seeing other fellow human beings rather than a racial class. And I really think that Gamma Phi Beta needs to do that same thing. I mean, and there's others on campus. I don't want to go and vilify and demonize the entire UND community, because I wouldn't trade my experience at UND for anything. But when somebody steps out of line like this, they need to be put into check, and they need to know that we live in a society that won't tolerate these little microaggressions. And so there's an immense backdrop. They can't just expect to do that and to get away with it.
Thank you. I'm going to toss this over now to my other guest real quick, Jordan Breen, a.k.a. Mike Jordan. He's a Native American hip-hop artist and enrolled member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa. Mike Jordan uses his voice to tackle issues such as gun violence, suicide, and alcoholism. Thank you for being on the show today, Jordan. I wanted to ask you, going on what Chase just said, talking about how students are made to feel. And you're not a student at UND, but you are a Native American student, and you've said that you've drawn the line on this issue. I would like you to talk about that, and I would like you to talk about how do you express what is happening as a result to Native American students of the continued use of this logo and mascot.
Thank you for having me. So I appreciate that, Cindy. And Chase hit it. I mean, he hit all issues with that matter. You know, like I didn't attend the University of North Dakota. I'm attending the Minnesota State University of Moorhead. I don't really see that there, obviously, because we're not fighting over a logo. But I've seen it on the other side of the coin, meaning lived in Grand Forks for a long time. I grew up there. My mom went to the University of North Dakota, and I moved back and forth on the reservation and in Grand Forks. I have a lot of friends who are fans of the University of North Dakota Fighting Sioux hockey, right? A lot of them attended the university. They eat, sleep, and excuse my language, they do that. You know, that's what they do. They never said anything derogatory towards me. I was a fan. I'm not going to lie. I was a huge fan. My cousin is the artist for the logo, who is a Turtle Mountain, who is Chippewa, our Anishinaabe. We were proud of that he was the artist for that. We all wore the new sweatshirts that came out. I went to the events. I went to all the hockey games. I was a huge fan. But what happened was my friends, an old college professor of mine, and I'll tell you the story about her, they drew a line between us and them, okay? They said things that were not cool, to put in the easy way, that we, you know, the stereotypes. We go to school for free. My college professor that I was talking about, as we're friends on Facebook, she was talking about, well, we can't go to your casinos anymore and economically boost your tribe because that's what we do. A college professor told me that, said that, not me personally. And then I checked her. I did it in a different manner. I didn't blow up on Facebook and tell her that's not cool. I messaged her, and I said, hello. And she stopped for a second. She said, you're upset with me, aren't you? So we had the conversation. And she realized that was wrong without me jumping on her back and arguing with her and doing something that is not the right way to do it, because that doesn't help anybody. We're built to fight. I was built to fight. But I'm built to fight in a different manner, because I grew up around that, those types of fights. And these are different fights that we see and grew up on the reservation. Abuse and things like that. So we got to do it in a different manner, but... So again, like I said, I was a fan of it, and I had to draw the line. It's us versus them. So I figured out what side I was taking on, because I grew up on the reservation. I am Native American. Chase was talking about identity and looking Native American. I dealt with it on a different realm, because I'm super light complected. I had to witness people not knowing that I'm Native American. The ugliest things that anybody could say about Indians, they said that to me, thinking that I was not Native American. Example was, I went to a holiday party in Fargo here not too long ago. The game was on, and there was a huge holiday party. It was 300, 400, 500 people there. My wife and I sat down. And long story short, the guy started talking about Native Americans and how we're crybabies and we're always whining around about something. Instead of fighting with this guy, because that's what I wanted to do, that's how I grew up, I have a tattoo on my left arm. It's a tattoo of a Native American who looks very prideful with his eyes closed, with his head up, with a headdress. And it also has the Sky Dancer, the casino, and the water tower from Belker, because that resembles the reservation. I said nothing to the gentleman. I lifted up my arm because I was wearing a shirt and tie, and I just stood there, and I showed him my arm without trying to show him, and he looked at it, and he disappeared. Him and his friend were gone. I didn't see him the rest of the night. So I fought back with something different instead of arguing with people and drawing the line between race, white, and natives, and whatever color out there. Let's not make it about color. We know who we are. We know what color we are. It's about right and wrong, and saying hurtful things to people and having hurtful things done to people within itself. That's the real issue. What Gamma Phi Beta did, that's hurtful. That hurts, whether they know it or not, because they're smart college girls. That hurts. And a lot I hear about on Facebook and things like that, social networking, is the same thing, is that we honor the Fighting Sioux. We honor that, you know. I've been watching them since I was a little kid. The issue is that, yeah, you honor Fighting Sioux. You honor Fighting Sioux hockey. You don't honor the people. They don't, not at all, because I called out some friends of mine who live in Grand Forks all their life, were big fans. When I started talking about Wasippi and Timeout Week, they had no clue that that was there. That's the issue. If we're going to educate people in that manner, that they should go out and find out what we're about without
now,
arguing with them.
Following up on that question, I'm going to put this one to you, Chase. There's been discussion that there will be some type of racial sensitivity training that the sorority sisters will participate in. And I wanted to talk more about that with my other guest, and hopefully I'll get a chance to do that, because she actually said that she went and met with the representative of the sorority, and she felt that the meeting didn't go quite as well as she had hoped. But also there was something that I saw on television last night here locally. They interviewed Nick Kramer, who is the student body president, and they're talking about funding the feed. And at the same time, he tweeted out Fighting Sioux Forever. He went on television to say that it's very unfortunate that people in the Native American community have taken what the banner said out of context and have taken this as an attack against Native Americans or a jab at them, when it was really never intended as such. It sounded to me almost as if this student body president was somehow retracting the essence of the apology that was made. And I wanted to get your comments on that, and what do you make of this controversy about now funding the additional monies that were requested for the powwow?
I remember. I mean, I followed the Twitter war a little bit, and I understood. I think I read a statement that this Kramer made about you know, that the University of North Dakota Indian Association got funded at $20,000 for this year, and that was more than any other student organization, and so he felt that he was justified in vetoing the additional request for the buffalo feed. I understand that. What I don't understand is how he could assert that we are taking things out of context when the banner clearly stated that you know, they took our mascot. Now the pronoun they're claiming it refers to the NCAA. We're saying it could be interpreted to mean us, but it doesn't really matter, because the underlying base of that banner is the Fighting Sioux mascot. And when you talk about the Sioux mascot, it refers to the Sioux people and the Native American students that are there in general. It doesn't matter what nation you're from, what Native nation you're from. When you were there and the Fighting Sioux mascot debate came up, you were lumped into the Native American category, and you had to respond to it. So there's no getting around that we're taking this out of context. And as far as the buffalo feed, I understand his logic for that, but the issue is bigger than him. I don't expect him, as the student body president, to understand that Native Americans are bringing in multi-millions of dollars into that university. I mean, he's a real young guy. He's a student body president. He's not the president of the university. I don't really expect him to, you know, to know all that. So I understand where he's coming from, but for him to say that and for him to tweet Fighting Sioux Forever, it looks like they're the ones that are trying to draw a line and say, hey, we're over here. We want the Fighting Sioux mascot. We're going to hold on to it forever, and we're not going to cut you in on any of the progression that we should be a part of at an institution of higher learning.
And one more follow-up question to you, Chase, because you are at Standing Rock. This is something that's been kind of hotly debated a lot. I was on a radio show today, and I had several members of Standing Rock call and bring up the fact that 70% of Natives support UND's use of the logo, and that Spirit Lake voted to keep the name while Standing Rock refused a vote to its people. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. There's even with the Washington Redskins, I mean, the people, the general public will say things like, not all Native Americans are united on this, and that's to be expected. We're not all on the same sort of path of healing or decolonizing. It's important to remember that, because not every Indian gives a damn about sovereignty or about our identity or about our languages or about our ceremonies. The system is set up to produce little Indians that don't care about all that stuff. Actually, that's what. That's the kind of system that we're raised in here. And so I don't expect a lot of, the majority of Natives to be pissed about the practice of using Indians as mascots. But when it's a racial slur like the Redskins, or when it's this goofy-looking Chief Wahoo from the Cleveland Indians, then that's a more visceral thing, and I expect more people to get that. But on Standing Rock in particular, there was a movement. They actually did have a vote. It wasn't called on by the Standing Rock tribal government. It was called on by the Sioux County, the municipal government. They had an election, and I don't remember the year. I think it was 2009 or 10 or whenever this stuff was hot again. They actually had an election, county election, and on that ballot they put a question to the effect of, do you support the use of the Fighting Sioux nickname and logo at the University of North Dakota? Do you not? And I think it was 50% for, 50% against. And out of 2,000 eligible voters in that town, I think 200 people voted. And the reality is, when you're on the Reds, you don't really care about the mascot fight. You sort of have to see yourself in a different light. One that in a population that's not dominated by Natives. That's the only time I was able to sort of try to take an objective look and find out what's going on with this practice, because the rest of America is they're just doing it. They're just tomahawk chopping, and they don't know any better. You know, I don't really expect them to know any better. We don't have any excuses anymore, because we have the means to sort of educate. We don't have to hit all of them, but we have to hit enough people that have open minds to sort of tell them that, hey, there's a problem with this, and we can try to articulate it for you, you know, like by this radio show, or by, there's countless materials out there for people to really look at this if they want to look at it on any level. On Standing Rock, there was a movement by the tribal council, by some members of the tribal council, to have a referendum vote, and they were claiming that they had, I think it was, they got like 900 signatures saying, let's have a referendum vote where everybody votes, every eligible tribal voter votes whether or not we should support UND's use of the Fighting Sioux name. And we were, those of us who want to change the mascot, or who wanted to change the mascot, did a lot of door-to-door campaigning and were able to get more signatures that call, you know, that let the council know that, hey, you don't have to respond to all this public pressure, because there was a lot of pressure coming from the Ralph Engelstad Arena, a lot of private money. People were being flown around to go and lobby for this cause, this lost cause, just like Dan Sanders flying around some Cherokee guy to different reservations and touting the Reds as something good. That happened with Ralph Engelstad Arena as well. Anyway, it didn't pan out, and these guys just, they're holding on to what they see as the good old days, the glory days, when Indians knew their place. And that's just not the case anymore. You can't unprogress yourself or unevolve yourself. Once your mind is open, there's no going back from that. And, you know, our kids are the same way. Their friends are the same way. Our families, it's really, there's no way but to evolve in this situation. And that's not happening at the rate that it needs to happen at UND.
Yes, good point. Now, talking about the cultural sensitivity training, this question goes to you, Jordan. This is the suggested, solution, if you want to call it that. I would put it in quotations as a solution because I wanted to ask you, you're a young person, you represent our future. And what do you think about that as a solution? Do you think it will be effective? And what would you like to see actually happen?
Oh, good question. I mean, it kind of goes the same thing with my music. I'm not a therapist or claim to be a therapist. You could go through the motions just like they're saying the cultural sensitivity training. It's just like having a young Native American student go to a social worker. They're not on the same level, you know. As a youth, that would happen to me because I would talk to social workers all the time because of stuff back home that was going on, or in my house. Excuse me. That stuff didn't work for me because I felt they were talking above. They didn't relate to me. So the same with music. When I talk to Native American students about alcoholism and suicide, I talk to them because I've been there. I've done that. I've attempted to give up. So that's why they listen. They listen because I'm not above them, or do I claim to be above them? They want to have two both parties talk, or have them be taught something and think that they're going to take away with something. That's a history class. Anybody could go to history class and try to learn. It's what their heart wants them to learn. I would love to talk to the girls that identify beta, because I'm not above them. I'm young like them. I went to school. I have the same friends as they do. I graduated, and I'm still friends with previous girls who went to Gamma Phi Beta. We're friends. I would go to them and build a relationship and talk to them like a normal person and not come down on them for the crap that they pulled, because it's uncalled for. It's unnecessary. So that approach would be, you know what I mean? That's how the university system sticks out with fixing an issue. Is we'll go through training. It's like therapy when you're married and you're supposed to go see a therapist. You know, get somebody out there with a voice of I'm not a voice of reasoning, but I'm a voice of somebody who has been there, done that, and I'm an open ear. I have ears that want to listen and know why they're doing that, and know that, and be that person to shed a tear in front of them and tell them that that's not cool. People are hurt from that. If that answers your question.
Very well, thank you. And now I'm gonna toss a question to Chase, and this, you know, it's sort of a legal question because it's come up a lot. People are talking about their freedom of speech. Even the president, in his response on behalf of the university, said that they respect people's freedom of speech. They teach it at the university, and they also feel that it's important for people to respect each other. But, you know, this debate about the freedom of speech, the right to continue to, you know, hold on to the mascot, could you talk about, is that freedom of speech, and how is the idea of freedom of speech and discrimination How can we have a discussion about those two things while preserving people's freedom of speech?
Yes, people have a right to express themselves, you know, in a manner that and however they choose, as long as that's not hate speech or speech that incites violence or riots or anything like that. And I don't think what Gamma Phi Beta did was illegal. I mean, they have a right to express themselves, just as natives would have a right to put something offensive on a banner and put it up in a public place, and you know. But I don't see the logic behind doing that. We just don't do things like that. And yes, they have the legal right to do that, but should a society or a college community condone that sort of messaging? That's a moral question, and I definitely don't think that the university should let that slip by, or the Native American community. And they didn't let it slip by. President Kelly issued a statement. It'd be more important for the sorority itself to distance itself from the university community, because I myself, I don't want that sorority screwing up UND's progression into the future. We fought long and hard to have the mascot removed, and so that Native students, regardless of your race or whatever, you could just go to the university, study, and have an unhindered, unfettered college educational experience. I mean, I didn't get to have that at UND. I had to had to respond to this issue, and even though it's gone, it's still an issue. People are, it takes a little time, and I definitely agree that they have the right to express themselves in manners that they so choose. But the community itself needs to let them know that speech that's intended to disrespect or take a jab at or make a snide remark at Native Americans, but that could be perceived to be taken that way, I mean, maybe they should think twice about what they put out. I mean, we don't put out stuff that's intended to take a jab. We joke around a lot, but there's no joking here. I mean, the same sorority that hosted the Cowboys and Indians party, there's something inherently wrong with the way that where these kids are coming from. And, you know, we have to trust that they have the capabilities, the intellectual capabilities and the open minds to come away with a sense, a base sense of respect and realizing how their messaging could be taken.
You know, one of the things that was brought up about that was that, well, the sorority sisters that put out the banner are not the same exact sorority sisters that were involved in that party that happened. There seems to be a disconnect in terms of holding the sorority accountable for any past actions that might have been offensive. So what would you say to that, that lack of understanding of the continuity of the history, not just of the history of the removal of the mascot logo, but the history of the sorority itself?
There should be an inquiry into whoever grants. I don't know how the Greek system works, but I'd imagine it's a hierarchy. So there's Gamma Phi Beta, and then there's Gamma Phi Beta's parent organization. And so somewhere there's got to be some oversight into what happens on college campuses. And I think with the history, I only know of these two incidents, but I guarantee you there's more out there, because this stuff has been happening for the last 40 years. It just doesn't get violent. Right? And it used to get violent, like when there was an ice sculpture of a Native woman with, I think they made a bust out of a Native woman, and on her breast they wrote Lick'em Sioux. And there was a guy named, I believe his name was George Whirlwind Soldier, and he witnessed that. And he just became incensed at the sight of it and went up to the frat house and ended up fighting a couple of guys, or I don't know how it... Anyway, Whirlwind Soldier ended up in jail, and then President Starcher had to bail him out of jail. So we don't, you know, that's the thing that we want to avoid, is those kind of unnecessary contacts like that. But the fact that the university had that mascot or that nickname for so long, it breeds this culture. And it allows for people who don't have an understanding, it allows them and promotes them to express these things themed around, you know, Native Americans.
Thank you. This is my final question, and I'll let both of you comment. I'll start with you first. And I just want to tell you, I laugh a little bit about this because we have a running joke in my family when we're talking about issues like this, that the Irish always come out. And my daughter said she's going to create a rap that's like, what about the Irish? What about the Irish? What about the Irish? Who gives a flip, you know? But it has come up over and over again in this discussion. What about the fighting Irish? And what about the use of the Seminoles? You talked a little bit earlier about other racist mascots that, you know, really need to go. They need to go. But these two have been brought up a lot. And they say, well, the Seminoles, they're cool with it. And if you want to get rid of all of these other mascots, shouldn't we also get rid of the fighting Irish? What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, that's not a tough one. I definitely don't think that we need to wait for anybody else to change before we change. But the fighting Irish, I don't know what the Irish involvement is with with Notre Dame University. But, and I know that Irish people don't consider themselves white people. And, you know, white people is a stereotype or a classification in itself. So it's one that's convenient, just like it is for us to say Indian. That's a stereotype and a classification in itself. But there's no way to tell, really, Irish people from the quote-unquote general white population. So it's not as easy for them to be discriminated against. And all, but they do suffer some of the same stereotypes. I remember on every St. Patrick's Day, it's horrible on Facebook to see all these drunk Irish shirts, and they, I don't know if the Irish care about that stuff, but I don't like the way that stuff looks. I mean, maybe because I know, you know, I've seen those same sort of memes and cartoons and caricatures having to do with Indians, and it's just, it's not cool. If the Irish wanted their that to change, I would support them. But that's not my call to make. But I definitely think that, you know, on a theoretical level, that's wrong. But we shouldn't have to wait for anybody. The Redskins, the Cleveland Indians, Notre Dame, even our own reservation-based schools. We shouldn't have to wait for anybody to change when something is clearly wrong. Such as the Fighting Sioux or the Redskins or the Indians or the Braves. It's all going to change. It's just part of social evolution.
How about you, Jordan?
I'm right with Chase on that. I mean, my feelings on it is that we got our own problems to fight about. You know, I hear that all the time in an argument when you're discussing the logo. What about the Fighting Irish? What about the Fighting Irish? Are you offended by that? Is somebody out there offended by that? If they are, go fight for it. If that's a social issue with you, then go fight for it. I got to fight my own battles, and my battle lies with Native American mascots. I got to waste my time on that. I want to take my breath that I have left in me to fight for that. They can fight for the Fighting Irish. I agree, just like Chase. I mean, you see T-shirts out there with them drunk and holding beers and things like that. Hell yeah, that's offensive. And if I was a real Irishman, if I was from Ireland, I would fight for that, just as I would fight for the rights of Native Americans and for logos and mascots.
Thank you. Any comments on the Seminole from either of you?
They say they do it tastefully, don't they? Is that what their deal is, that they do the Seminoles tastefully, and they got all the approval from the from the tribe. Well, yeah, you can get approval from the tribe, but what about the rest of the nation? We're all indigenous people. You know, we have a say in that. You know, not just their tribe. Just like that guy who came on the radio station today talking about Spirit Lake was for it. But yeah, that's just Spirit Lake. What about the prideful Native Americans who don't want to be logos?
Well, thanks to both of you. I wanted to just give you both a chance if you have any other important comments or, you know, something I didn't ask that you really feel like you have to comment on. Chase, I'll give you a chance to go first if there's anything else.
No, I think I'm just happy to be on. I don't have anything else to add.
How about you, Jordan?
My comments, again, just go towards Chase. Chase, this is an absolute honor to be on this station with you. I look up to you so much. You have no idea. Because you are a last real Indian, as am I. So I appreciate everything you do, and you do it in a tasteful manner. You know what I mean? You do it for the opposite party. You don't do it as if you're better than them. You do it because you're knowledgeable about it and you lived it. So I appreciate you and more than you know. So don't ever stop fighting the good fight, because I would one day like to be in your shoes and do what you do for Native for Indian country.
You're already in those shoes. We're all in those shoes. We have work to do, and it's really a lifelong sort of deal that we're going to be dealing with. We can only grow, though, I'll tell you that much. So just keep at it.
Thank you. And Cindy, thanks. Thank you, too. We appreciate you as well.
Well, thanks very much. You can find Last Real Indians online. Chase also has a Twitter account, and he's on Tumblr. And just Google the guy. He's everywhere. And Jordan, where can people find your work?
You can find my music at Mike Jordan, Jordan Music on Facebook.com. Also on Twitter at Mike Jordan Music.
Perfect. Thank you both very much. I really appreciate your time today. And you can find the podcast on kpppfm.com. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Have a good one, guys.
You're listening to KPPPLP-FM, broadcasting online through Live 365 and soon to be found on your radio dial at FM 88.1, adding local color to your airwaves. You're listening to interviews taken in April of 2014 that centered around the real story behind UND sorority scandal. These are Native perspectives, so we're playing them again because they pertain to what's going on today. Have a listen.
Speaking with Amber Finley, Executive Director of the North Star Council, a nonprofit with the mission to create a Native American center in the greater Grand Forks community. I want to thank you for doing this interview with me. We're talking again about the sorority at UND that posted this banner that has caused such a huge commotion. I want to start off by asking you about the perceived idea that has been talked about a lot in the media lately, that this banner wasn't really aimed at the Native American population. It was actually aimed at the NAA instead.
Right. That sort of is their general tactic to use, to invalidate our perception of what we are feeling. And when I say we, I mean American Indian students or American Indian community members of the Grand Forks area. And then because it was put out on social media, then also the opinions of I would say most Native Americans. I can't speak for everybody, but I mean the majority of people that I know. I do have friends that do support the logo, but I do have quite a few people who do not support the logo. And for them to say that it's only it was only aimed at the NCAA, shows their lack of understanding about how the logo even got taken away in the first place. And it wasn't really taken away, if we want to critically think about this. They never owned us as an image. We're not mascots. We're people. So it's inappropriate for them to act like they owned an image that doesn't even represent them. But more importantly, the whole reason why the NCAA even stepped in was because there was controversy on the campus. And no matter how many Indian-related programs, no matter how many professional societies had stepped up and said, hey, this is detrimental to Native Americans and their own images of themselves, and it's psychologically damaging, the university sort of kept saying that their hands were tied, they couldn't make a decision to get rid of the logo. Not that I think that they would have done it on their own anyways, but that was sort of their stance at the time, and so the NCAA pushed the issue. And so they represented that Native voice. And so for them to say that because they were attacking the NCAA, it had nothing to do with us is inaccurate, because the only reason the NCAA stepped in was because nobody else would step in and sanction them or create some type of penalties to force them into making a decision that they didn't want to make in the first place.
Thank you. That was really great background, and it brings a lot of depth to this discussion, because that comment has been tossed around a lot lately in reference to this incident. The other, and I'll just touch on it briefly from a little bit a different perspective than the way that it's being said, which is that there's a victimization. There is a too much sensitivity. There's an attitude of, why can't you guys get over this type of comments being made. Can you talk a little bit about what that impact is? You touched on it a little bit, what that impact is on the Native American population. And, you know, I know that you work closely with the campus.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably see this firsthand and can talk from your firsthand experience about how this is affecting students in particular that are in this environment.
Right. I think when people say that, oh, everybody's being too sensitive, or people are taking this the wrong way, they don't really understand, you know, what's going on, it's very easy for people who are the oppressors to blame the oppressed for having negative feelings about the way that they're being treated. So, for instance, on campus, most non-natives can't tell the difference between tribal affiliations. So nobody could tell if I'm Mandan, Hidatsa, Dakota, Lakota. They can't tell the difference if somebody's Ojibwe or if somebody's of a different tribal background. They lump us all together. So now we're all considered Native American. And I think where this is the most detrimental is it leaks into the classrooms when there's discussion about the logo. And if a Native student doesn't feel particularly comfortable about having to speak about it because they're worried about whether or not their fellow students will then look at them differently, treat them differently, won't interact with them like any other normal student, there's a lack of wanting to acknowledge that you even have an opinion about the logo. And unfortunately, what often was happening before the logo went away was students would be in a classroom, and oftentimes Native students would be either one or two of a classroom full of at least 100 non-Native students, majority Caucasian, and they would be asked, what's your opinion on this? Or can you speak for all Native Americans? And so then, you know, they're carrying around this burden that's not really theirs to carry. And part of it comes from the fact that they have the logo. And most people don't understand what it's like to feel that way because, especially European Americans, they're just, their mindset's a little bit different than minorities because they've never had to be under somebody else's power. They've never had to not be the status quo. They don't have to be, they are pop culture. So unfortunately, I don't think they'll ever be able to understand what it's like to be in our shoes and to feel the way that we feel and to internalize the types of things that are being said to us and the types of attitudes that we get just for having, one, a difference of opinion than them, and two, a different perspective than they have. And so I truly don't think that we're being oversensitive. The whole reason why we even posted that picture of that banner was to let the rest of the community know that this kind of stuff was still happening. There's been worse things said about us. There's been worse things written, posted all over the place. But it just felt like a stab at Native Americans because, like I said, the NCAA stepped in, and even though they didn't take away a mascot, they actually took away the logo because the UND decided to retire their mascot a long time ago. It's hard to have to have that wound reopened every single time that a Native person steps up and says, hey, I don't like what you're doing. I don't think it's right. And so then now we're the oversensitive people and we're the party that's to blame for something that a bunch of adults decided to do upon themselves.
Yes, and I can hear the hurt in your voice. You know, it is such a, and I appreciate that you share your opinion with us about this because it's a hard thing to talk about. It's painful, I think, to bring up, as you said, for the students because of the backlash. And Chase earlier was talking about violence that's been occurring on campus in the past. And I wanted if I could, talk a little bit more about the significance of this banner being placed where it was placed, right next door to the Native American Association building, and during Timeout Week. And I know that you are involved with having spoken to the sorority representative.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to give us your insight about how this affects Native students to see this happening during Timeout Week, what the significance of Timeout Week is, and your interactions with the sorority.
Right. And I honestly don't think that these particular sorority girls were intentionally trying to attack Timeout Week. Just so happens that this week is UND is in the Frozen Four. So I think everybody was a little aware that there was going to be a lot of school pride and those types of activities. I think what caught everybody off guard was the fact that this sorority in particular has some bad blood with American Indian Student Services, in particular because they're right next door. So we see them every day. Sometimes they're rude. Sometimes they're disrespectful. And in particular, in 2008, I believe it was, they actually held a costume party that was themed Cowboys and Indians. And they posted all kinds of pictures on their Facebook page. And that stirred up a very big controversy at that time, and they were reprimanded. And part of that reprimand included them meeting with American Indian Student Services and some of the American Indian student organizations. And they were supposed to come up with this compromise about how they were going to create some dialogue and try to be respectful of each other and be good neighbors. And so out of that resulted in the sorority girls frequenting the American Indian Student Services because at the time American Indian Student Services used to offer free printing to all the students who came to use the facility. Well, prior to the sorority incident, majority of the students that came to use the facility were Native American students. And then all of a sudden there was this influx of sorority girls coming over to print out their papers. They would not interact with any of the other American Indian students. They didn't stay long enough to, hang out in the lounge and meet anybody or say hi to anybody. They just would come in, do their business, and leave. And so in addition to that, they would also get very upset when we would have events at the American Indian Student Services Center because it meant that they had less parking available to them. And so there, again, created just some more tension between them, and it ended up feeling more like it was a punishment to the Native American students because here's this group of people who were insensitive to them in the first place, and now they have to see them every day, and they know that they're not genuine, that they don't want to come over and interact on a personal level, that they don't want to have a better understanding of our culture, that they don't want to participate with us at any level beyond coming to use our facility to get free printing or to use the internet because maybe their laptop doesn't work or their printer doesn't work. And so there's been a continuing, because they were told that they had to do cultural sensitivity training. I think they did one session with that particular group during that year. And then after that, there was no follow-up. There was no reaching out to find out how they could become more involved with their next-door neighbors, the American Indian students, how they could be more sensitive to them, how they could prevent something like what happened on Monday from happening again. And the university as well is just as responsible because they didn't back anything up either. They all talk about how much they want diversity at our school, how the University of North Dakota is the premier institution for Native American students, yet they don't follow through with making sure that that place feels like a safe environment for all students, including American Indian students. And so because it happened during timeout week, it did feel like a low blow to us, even though after speaking with some of the girls, I got the feeling that that really truly wasn't the intention. They just were completely insensitive to how they worded their banner and how that was going to affect their neighbors, the American Indian students, not really fully understanding the history that goes behind that particular sorority and their interactions with us. And so it was, I think, construed as an intentional act of racism. There was plenty of other ways that they could have expressed themselves and expressed their pride in their school. They could have completely left off that first line and just said, we still have pride at UND. There's so many things that could have went differently, and they didn't. And it's unfortunate. And I think that was the intention of people taking a picture of it, putting it out there in the social media, and just trying to bring awareness to, here's an example of when people are insensitive to other people's cultures, to other people's feelings, and not realizing why that would be so upsetting.
Yes. And I want to ask you about timeout week in terms of, you know, Danny earlier in my interview with her was saying that there is a very low attendance of white students to timeout week. First, she talked about it extensively, how important this week is to Native American students to share with other students and with the community the issues, the challenges, the projects, and the work of the Native American community. And yet they're very poorly attended by the white students at school. So it sounds like that makes things a lot more difficult in terms of being able to bring awareness to that population, which is, in this case, right next door.
Right.
And the second thing I want you to comment on is something that Chase Ironize brought up during the interview that we did earlier about the bison feed, about about the money that's coming in, about how much money this powwow brings in. And about the comments of Nick Kramer, the student body president, and his hashtag Fighting Sioux Forever, the timing that it came out, and the veto I know that's a lot, but I hope that you remember it. I can rehash it if you'd like. Okay.
Sure. I'll give it my best here. So I think one thing that I don't know if Chase covered this or if Danny covered it, but to keep things in perspective and so that people actually understand the history of Time Out Week, you have to go back, and this is the 44th annual Time Out Week in Wachipi. It would have been the 45th annual, but they had to cancel it 1 year. So 44, 45 years ago, there was right around the same time as the AIM movement and a lot of civil rights movements and a lot of awakening of especially Native Americans being able to reclaim their own identity. There were several pretty radical Native students who were attending the university, and they were sort of the original people who said, hey, we don't like being your caricature. Things were a lot more derogatory during their time. So they had a mascot, they had a logo, you know, they had all these different paraphernalia all over the place that were really degrading to Native Americans. And that continued all the way up until even as early as the early 2000s, with just kind of one image after the other, just constantly negative and causing hurt. And so when we go back to when Time Out Week and the Wachipi were first organized, it was actually organized by, or it was actually given the first funding by, I believe it was President Clifford at the time. And what had happened was there was some tension on campus because of the logo and Natives speaking out about it. And I believe it was like an ice sculpture contest that was happening. Sort of like this banner contest. There was an ice sculpture contest to support, I believe it was the hockey team again. And the banner, or not the banner, the ice sculpture was actually a really derogatory ice sculpture of a Native American. I believe he was naked. It was so appalling that some of the Native students went and basically knocked it down, tried to destroy it. And the cops were called, and then those students were put in jail, and the president at the time bailed them out, and that sort of started that conversation about what are we going to do to fix this, and how are we going to make things better for Native students on campus. And so Time Out Week and Wachipi were meant to set aside some time for all UND students, faculty, staff, administrators, to learn more about the Native American students that were attending UND, about their background, about their culture, giving them the opportunity to share that with the entire campus for 1 week. And so when we talk about the significance of Time Out Week, it really starts there. And if people understood that, I think there might be, especially Native students, if they actually understood that, I think they would be better able to promote Time Out Week. I think we've gotten away from understanding where the roots of Time Out Week came from, and we sort of say, well, this is just a good event that you should go to because we're trying to educate you about our culture. And unfortunately, in this day and age, even many of the Native students don't attend some of those events. And there's no backing up by the student government, the student leadership, and there certainly isn't any backing up of the administration. I believe President Kelly may have attended the opening ceremony this week. He usually does, and that's usually the only event that I do see him at until the Wachipi, and then when they're going to honor him, then he shows up and his wife, and they hang out for a while, and I think every president has done that. And it just sort of sets the standard. If we're so important and this university is supposed to be our premier institution in the entire state, why are we treated like we don't matter when students are basically spending a whole year planning an event to try to educate the campus about who they are and what the issues are and how to create some dialogue. And we've seen some events have really high attendance, and that's usually because there's some type of extra credit being offered through Indian Studies programs or through sociology programs, or it depends on which instructors really feel strongly about having their students attend our events. Then all of a sudden you'll see non-Native students there. They stay for maybe half the session. They write a few notes. They get just enough notes so that they can go back and write their extra credit paper. And most of them head out early. I've walked into sessions where the room is dark and there's a speaker up in the front. And all along the back row, there's non-Native students sitting there with their laptops open, and they're not paying attention to one thing that the speaker has to say. So it does feel like our message falls on deaf ears. So that's the significance, at least that's my interpretation of what the significance of Time Out Week is and the Wachipi. As far as Nick Kramer goes, I watched his interview on Point of View, and I thought he gave some pretty cookie-cutter answers. And I think Chris Berg really guided him through answering in a way that was going to be politically correct and that was going to help him try to save some face. But he told Point of View, and he's been continuously repeating this now, is that he agrees that his timing for hashtag Forever Fighting Sioux was poorly chosen, but that his intention was to support the Gamma Phi Beta girls for showing school pride. And if you ask me, that's a crock of BS, because I have no idea what Fighting Sioux Forever has to do with Gamma Phi Beta, other than those girls, but that was the intention of their banner. I mean, he just linked those two things together by posting Forever Fighting Sioux. And then when he was asked, would you do anything different, he said no, because he believes that UND will always be Forever Fighting Sioux. So you get to kind of see where his mindset is, and he doesn't really care who he offends. And that's fine, because we don't really care about us offending him as well and telling him that what he's doing is racist, because the logo is racist, and to continue to try to perpetuate that logo and to try to hide it by creating hashtag Roll Tribe and creating all this merchandise to kind of say, you know what, you can't take away the logo because we're going to always support it. He's just one example of that type of mentality that's here in Grand Forks. We have gas stations, we have Shields, we have Ralph Engelstad Arena, who all went and overstockpiled all of this Fighting Sioux merchandise so that they could continue to perpetuate what they were already told was a logo that is considered racist and insensitive and doesn't have any place at an institution of learning. So as far as Nick Kramer goes, I don't think we're ever going to change his mind. And unfortunately, the people who support him have the same mindset. And so you have to realize which fight you're going to win, which fight you're not going to win. So unfortunately, I don't believe he's somebody who we're going to win. Now, what's funny is today they had a special session of Student Senate because he vetoed the Buffalo Feed funding. So last Sunday, UNDIA, after many months of fundraising, after trying to get all the money together to be able to put on the Wachipi, fell short by $4,000 to be able to put on the Buffalo Feed. And what's funny is the university charges UNDIA for using the Hislop facility. And now, I don't know how familiar you are with the University of North Dakota, but they have several other sporting facilities that are available now. And so the Hislop's rarely used. I think they only really use the swimming pool, and some of the space is used for offices. And so, of course, everybody else kind of uses the old gyms whenever they want to for pickup games and for doing whatever. But when UNDIA wants to put on the powwow, they're actually charged, and I believe they're charged $15,000 for the whole weekend to put on a powwow at their own university in a facility that's on campus. In addition to that, they're also charged, I believe, something like $3,000 or $4,000 for parking, because why would we invite all of these people to come to our celebration and then expect them to pay parking? It's just
wow.
not the way that we do things. So
wow.
we take the bill for parking. In addition to that, we also have to pay for the extra security that has to be available with the police department just to make sure that everything's safe. And then on top of all of that, we have to pay the dancers, the ones that win. We have to pay for the drum that wins the drums that win the singing contest. We have to pay people who need to run the powwow, the MC, the arena director. And then what we end up doing is using students to be head men and head women dancers, so then we can save money in those areas. And so today we were actually told at that Senate meeting, I don't remember the senator's name, but he's pretty chummy with Nick Kramer. He kept on saying that he felt like it's not student government's responsibility to pay for the buffalo feed because UNDIA mismanages their funds. And so when he was called on saying that, he actually kind of backed up and said, well, I don't really know the whole process and how you guys do things, but just from a financial standpoint, if you get allocated $20,000 for an event and then you're not able to get enough funding for another part of the event that we already gave you money for, then that's what I consider mismanagement of funds. And so a lot of people were pretty upset with that statement, and a lot of people challenged it and kind of gave him a 101 on kind of what it takes to put on a powwow. And unfortunately, that happens every single year because UNDIA is a student organization, and they're a bunch of students who are basically doing what back home a powwow committee would do. People who were invested in a community would put together something, and they would get investment their community to put on a celebration like this. Unfortunately, in Grand Forks, not a lot of people value what we do, and so there is a lack of investment, including from the city of Grand Forks. Rather than taking a serious look at what the economic impact is for the city of Grand Forks, because we're talking about people who come in and spend the night Friday night, Saturday night, most of the time Sunday night. So they're staying at a hotel. In addition to staying at the hotel, now they have to eat out at restaurants. And in addition to eating out at restaurants, most natives come from the reservation or near a reservation. And so Grand Forks represents sort of city. And so there's some conveniences here that they don't have back home. And so they go shopping, and they drop lots of money into this community every single year, and yet the city only gives UNDIA $10,000. And they've told them that now that they've received this funding, they've changed some rules about how they're going to fund them, and they've actually told them that over the next 3 years, the amount will decrease, and they're going to be expected to have self-sustain their own powwow, even though nobody's willing to invest in it. And so in addition to all of these other stresses that are going on, we have Student Senate who decided, okay, instead of awarding UNDIA $4,000, they went to a compromise and they gave them $2,000, and they approved it on Sunday night. And then on Monday, Nick Kramer vetoed it. And his reasoning for vetoing it was that UNDIA is the only student organization that receives 2.5 times more than any other student organization would get if they went through the Student Organization Funding Agency, which they call SOFA, which most student orgs would have to go through. But because UNDIA has to request such a large amount in order to make up for their huge budget, they go directly to student government and request to have them put in as a line item. And so that was his reasoning behind not funding the $4,000 or even the $2,000. And then some of the student senators, we did have some allies on the student senate, and what they did was they called for a special meeting, and they wanted to overturn his veto. And so that was the meeting that I was at earlier today that overlapped the interviews that you were having, because what they did was they had us all come in, they basically said you can't say anything about anything else that's been happening this week. The only thing you can talk about is the Buffalo feed. And so we walk in there, and there's a huge group of students sitting in their fighting suit gear, obviously trying to intimidate the Native American students. They'll probably say that they were trying to support Nick Kramer and whatever, yada, yada, yada. But we get in there. They said that they explained things very clearly, but from my interpretation, on their agenda it said that they were going to discuss the Senate bill, which we were under the assumption meant that they were going to just discuss it with the senators first. And then there's an agenda item that says announcements and public comment. So everybody assumed that that meant that's when they're going to get to talk. And what the girl said that was running the meeting, she said, if you can get the attention of one of the senators, that will be your time to be able to have discussion. And so we're sitting there, the senators, three senators speak, and then she calls for discussion three more times. And for most of us, we've never been to a student government meeting. We don't know what their procedures are. And so we were under the assumption after she called discussion that she would open it up to public comment, and instead she called for a vote. And so, of course, they did not get enough votes to overturn the veto. And then they asked, is there any announcements or public comment? And so at that point, everybody kind of got up and said, well, we're really disappointed because you didn't even give us a chance to talk. And so they got upset and said, well, we explained things to you guys very clearly. I don't know why you're getting up here and condemning us for making a decision. If you wanted to talk about it, you should have gotten up when we told you you could have gotten up, and you needed to get the attention of a senator to do that. So we're all sitting there wondering, like, what the heck's going to go on? Several people get up, and they don't necessarily scold the student senate, but they just kind of tell them, like, we think that this is wrong. Several people tried to explain why the Buffalo feed is important, what hospitality means, why the UNDIA has to continuously ask for more money. And then a few people actually brought up an argument against Nick Kramer's position, because back in February, they allotted $160,000 to bring in a big-name artist for a spring concert that supposedly all university students are going to be able to go to for free. And then on that same day that they passed that bill, they also passed a bill to send 48 concert choir students to Cuba at $400 each, which would have meant that that one particular group got $19,200. And so people began questioning, like, is your argument valid when we're sitting here and we know that you're funding these other events and these other organizations at amounts way higher than $20,000, and we're asking for $2,000 more? So one of the senators asked for reconsideration, and that passed, and then they re-voted, and the veto stood. So there was a bright side to today, because the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Rikara Nation actually donated $2,000 to the Buffalo feed. And then I believe there's a few other student orgs, but other agencies on campus that are considering donating, because people became aware of this. And, of course, Nick Kramer is really upset because he thinks that the reason why people posted him vetoing this bill was because they wanted to call him racist. But that's not the reason why I posted the veto of the bill. I posted the veto because, from my standpoint, it wasn't fair to not award something that you already promised to award. And so if there was any way that we could get the word out that we were not going to be getting this money, that we could find some alternative funding, that was my intention. Now, when people start digging into Nick Kramer's Facebook page and his Twitter account, that's when it came to light that he had all of this other, what we deem as racist acts going on his page. And he had no problem Twittering all this stuff online, letting people know that he was upset that people were calling him out for what he did. Like, just because it's his right as the president to veto a bill, that nobody should question it. And I'd say that it's likewise the students' rights to know what they can and can't do when the president vetoes the bill that they want to go through. So that kind of turned into the big debacle today, and I don't think anybody from UNDIA thought that the student senate was going to be able to overturn the veto, but we kind of got to the point that we were trying to get to in the first place was to try to raise some funds to be able to put on this Buffalo feed, because it was going to happen whether Nick Kramer supported it or not. So I hope I answered all of your questions, but that's kind of everything that happened over the past week here.
I wanted to, like, just as a follow-up, like, in dollar terms, do you have an idea of how much money is brought in to the university and to the community based on the powwow?
Right. So with the university, we talk about the dollars. I talked briefly about the fact that we have to pay to rent the facility. So that money goes back into UND. So any money that's donated to us from a UND entity ends up just going back to UND anyways. So it kind of seems like a racket, if you ask me. And then on top of that, I know the year that I ran it, we did sort of like an economic impact report, because there were a couple of grants that were available at the time, and they had like a formula. You put in how many people you expected over the weekend, if they were going to be staying in hotels. And I believe, I can't remember for sure what the number was, but I believe over the weekend and that was back in 2006, $3 million was what we were looking at as far as the city of Grand Forks and all of their businesses, how they were economically impacted. And so we're talking about city of Grand Forks giving us $10,000 and they get a $3 million return. So
right.
I'm sure that number has changed and the Powell continues to grow and prices go up. And so that means that the economic impact is going up as well. And yet we are still fighting to raise $150,000 when you have the university and the community both economically favorably getting impacted by this one event that happens over the weekend. And we're not even talking about the week and all the speakers that we bring in and having to rent hotels for them and putting them up and doing banquets for them and paying for their food. So, I mean, when you think about it, it's probably a lot more than $3 million, but if we're going to have a conservative estimate, I would have to say that that's what we're looking at.
Wow. I wanted to bring that figure in so that people can think about the impact to the community financially, but also the richness, the depth of what this powwow does in the community and the importance of it. You know what I mean? And if you think about, as you said, 45-year history of doing it, that's a huge impact. My next question has to do with this contention. This came up a lot on the radio today. And I heard it, you know, if you look at the threads of people talking about this. There's this pushback among the Native community. When I was on the radio today, I had a lot of people calling from Standing Rock and saying, we voted at Spirit Lake to keep the name, and Standing Rock refused to vote. We could be like our sister tribe, but we can't, because our voices are being, our freedom of speech is being squashed. And other callers were saying 70% of Natives support UND's use. There's a history of support. There was a peace pipe ceremony in 1969. This name was given. I even interviewed Jordan Breen, whose cousin drew the logo. He's the artist that created it. And he talked about the fact that, you know, this issue has not just divided his family, he has seen it divide his community. Because, you know, his cousin, he told me, had even had this logo tattooed on his body, and he was very proud of his cousin. He was proud of the logo. He was proud of the artwork. And everyone wants to share in that pride. A lot of the white people commenting on this issue say, hey, a Native American artist, he created that logo, and people are very proud of it. And it's true. There are a lot of people that are very proud of it. Can you talk about this divide, this divisive conversation, and from your perspective, what needs to be said and done in regard to that? Yes, we were talking about the economic impact, and I was saying that, you know, it's important to remember the number of years that this has been going on and the importance of Time Out Week, the powwow, all of that in the context of this issue. And I wanted to ask you a follow-up question is different, about the support among Native Americans for the logo. Because today when I was on the radio, there was a lot of people that called from Standing Rock. And a representative, I believe his name was Frank, and he was from Spirit Lake, and he said Spirit Lake voted to keep the name, and the Standing Rock reservation refused to give the people an opportunity to vote. So the other thing that was brought up a lot was that 70% of Natives support UND's use of the logo and mascot. And there's this internal conflict. Jordan was talking about how his cousin was the one that actually was the artist that created the logo, and that his family was very proud of it. He was a very proud sports fan. But that something happened where he realized the damage, the hurt that this was causing, and he had to stand up against it. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to comment on that divisive conversation. And what do you make of what's happening? Chase talked a little bit about, you know, colonized minds, but I want you to talk about what's happening in the Native American community around this conversation.
Sure. I think when we take a look at the logo itself, I can understand completely why Bennett Breen's family completely supports him, because I would be the same way too if a member of my family did something that became nationally recognized, that was associated with an institution that most people consider a premier institution, that at the time probably made him feel pretty good. And I've met some of Bennett's family that have either gone to school at UND and don't really know anything about the logo issue until they experience something pretty negative on campus. And then their minds change, because it becomes crystal clear that even though that image is quite beautiful, that it's a great drawing, that it was genius marketing tool. But that's all it is. It does not represent Native Americans. A lot of people who support it, there's been some really crazy claims about how that logo was intended to honor Native Americans and our legacy in this state. And that argument only came out years down the road when the logo started being challenged. And I think anybody who's grown up on the reservation or who's lived on the reservation understands how much pride Natives have in their sports team and how much that they invest into their sports teams, especially when we talk about reservations. Usually it's basketball, sometimes it's football. But we ourselves identify by calling ourselves Warriors, Braves. I've even seen Chiefs. I came from Mandaree School, so Mandaree Warriors was our logo. And when I was at Mandaree, that logo represented me. So I was proud of it. And I wore that with pride. And we traveled and battled against plenty of non-Native teams that treated us like crap, called us racist names, were derogatory towards us. And I never really associated that with having to do anything to do with our logo. But it was, because that's the image that they think of when they think of us. And so you have a predominantly non-Native, let's just say white, institution that's now using an image that's associated with minorities. And they're perpetuating that that somehow honors the people that they're supposedly representing. Not very many Native students end up on the athletic teams at UND, so I don't buy the argument that that's somehow honoring us, because the majority of their teams are non-Native. In addition to what they think they're honoring us, they can't control how the fans of other teams treat our logo, the same way that when I lived on the reservation, we couldn't control how non-Natives treated us because of our image and because of the color of our skin. With that being said, there's been so many negative things that have happened at hockey games, at football games, making UND fans, including Native ones, walk away feeling shamed out, feeling hurt, feeling attacked. And that's not what I don't think that that's what Bennett Breen intended when he drew that logo. So then we have people that are living on a reservation. So we've got people who said, okay, well, we want to get UND to be able to use this logo. So what UND did, and especially the Ralph Engelstad Arena people, because they had invested so much into having that logo plastered all over that particular facility, they started whining and dining Native people from Spirit Lake, from Standing Rock, bringing them up here, giving them the time of their life. They would grab Native students. The president at the time was Coachella. There was one time I was in the park. There was a group of Native students. It was right after, I believe it was a football game, and they were pretty drunk in the park, and they told us that they had started drinking at the football game within President Coachella's personal box that he has there, and that they were called up there and they were treated like royalty, and that was the way that they felt, made them feel that they were being honored. And I don't agree with that. That's not honoring us. That's just doing the same thing that they did when they made us sign treaties, get us drunk, manipulate us, get us to turn against each other, and then take advantage of that and say, see, even your own people like that. And that's not necessarily true. Spirit Lake did pass saying that they were okay with the use of the logo. Problem is, most Spirit Lake people don't live here in Grand Forks. They don't experience the type of abuse that Native students on this campus have experienced. And even when they find out about it, they kind of try to downplay it because they don't want to believe that they're supporting something that's causing so much hurt to students. But then there's some that say, hey, that's wrong. I didn't know all that was going on. And so they change their mind and they publicly say it. And so I can understand why there are some natives that are supportive of the logo. We've had lots of conversations within UNDIA when the logo is here, lots of roundtable discussions, trying to get the points of view of both the natives that did support the logo and the natives that didn't support the logo. Of course, there's always, we can't say that everybody's going to get treated or mistreated on the campus just because of the logo, but there are people who are getting treated that way, and that's not right. And so just because the majority of people don't get treated that way doesn't make it okay for some people to get treated that way or for any of our Native students to be treated that way. And there lies the problem, is that we're going to these communities who really have nothing to do with the university other than them wanting to get approval from them to use the logo. And they have other issues that they're working on. They have other things that they have to worry about. And majority of the time, they're not sending their people to the University of North Dakota to go to school. So majority of their people have no idea what's actually happening. And when they do find out what's happened on this campus and they do find out the history of the logo and how it actually came to be and how it's transformed over the years and how the white people around here try to hide their racism, their blatant racism in these subtle ways, then they start to understand, and then we start to get people to realize that the logo was never a good thing and that many people were duped into thinking that it was some type of honoring, when really not one Native American was consulted before they changed the logo. They just wanted a logo that was going to match the bison. And what they thought of, the first thing they thought of when they thought of who can beat the bison, they thought of the Sioux. Because, again, there's that romanticism that's gone on for years and years and years of people thinking that they know who we are and what our people represent based on what popular media has put out there and what picture books have told us and all the people who've rewritten history so that we can forget about the real issues that happened to Native Americans and continue to happen today.
Amen. I wanted to ask you about all the memorabilia, all the paraphernalia, as you put it, you know, the jerseys, the hats, all of that stuff. And some people are saying that, you know, if the mascot and the logo is banned, so should all of that stuff at sporting events and at the college. What do you say to that?
I agree. They did put a ban on it. That's why they overstocked, or they went and stockpiled on all the stuff, because they managed to beat the deadline before they put a moratorium on it.
Who actually overstocked that? Because one of the things that came up on the radio show today was that the NCAA were hypocrites, because they were the ones that took away the mascot, but yet they were the ones that also went and bought up all this merchandise and flooded the market with it.
No, I don't think it was just NCAA. I know right here in Grand Forks, Shields still sells all of that stuff, and they – in the newspaper, I think it was just a few weeks ago, they even said that they deliberately stockpiled on all this stuff because they don't know how much that they should have ordered, but they just felt like it was for the fans, for the people who are just diehard fans and won't let it go. And so Shields does it. I know Ralph Engelstad Arena did it. There's a few gas stations in town that even have it on their billboard, their little electronic billboard that says Forever Sioux. So it's not the NCAA that did this or perpetuating that they should continue to do this. One of the other problems that is tied to this is the fact that the state legislature actually has not allowed UND to start choosing a new logo. I don't know what that intent was when they did that, but when they retired the logo, they basically said until you can't change, or you can't get a new logo until 2015. Now, when I read into that, what I see is that the state legislators, whichever ones were still big, avid Fighting Sioux fans, were plotting to try to find some type of loophole or try to figure out some way to bring back the logo. And so they didn't want UND phasing it out and then changing to a new logo right away. They wanted to have that opportunity to try to explore all their options. Now, whether that's true or not, I have no idea because I don't have any facts to back that up. But that's just my opinion about the reason why we haven't moved on to a new logo. And on Tuesday, when we had the meeting with we had the dean of students there, we had the provost, and we had the coordinator for student organizations. We're all in this meeting with some of the Gamma Phi Beta representatives and some faculty and staff, and that question got brought up. Why haven't you guys changed the logo? And that was the cookie-cutter answer that we got, was that their hands are basically tied, that they can't do anything about changing the logo until 2015, and they were asked why they haven't at least started the process of getting the committee together, figuring out how they're going to do this. And again, they just said, like, they're not sure what specifically they can or can't do. And so it creates that environment for these people who are basically feeling like they're in limbo. They had what they felt was the perfect logo, and then now they have no logo. And who wants to go around saying, go UND? Most of these guys don't. I even hear radio personalities. I hear business owners when they do their commercials, even on the radio or on TV, it's always go Fighting Sioux, Sioux Hockey, Sioux Yeah Yeah. I mean, even at my child's school, I had to go in and talk to the teacher because she was teaching my kids to sing the happy birthday song, and at the end of the birthday song, they would say Sioux Yeah Yeah. And so I had to go in and tell her how extremely inappropriate it was and that I didn't want my child participating in that type of activity anymore. And she was, you know, very apologetic, but, I mean, it's just that mentality here in Grand Forks is that they're so proud of their hockey team and their athletic teams that nobody's going to tell them that they can't have pride in a logo that was already deemed racist and inappropriate. And I don't know how we get through to those type of people and how we get them to change their mindset and to actually understand, because like I said at the beginning of the interview, unless you are an actual minority, you never experienced oppression, you never experienced having no power, so you can't actually be able to say, I empathize with you, I understand what you're going through, I would never want that to happen to anybody in my family. I just think there's that big disconnect there.
Okay, now I'm going to get into a tough question.
Sure.
It's a two-pronged question, and it has to do with reverse racism and freedom of speech. And you can see where the two prongs come from, because these things are talked about at the same time. And the argument goes something like this. You didn't have to be heard about this. You chose to be offended by it. You're talking about this logo as if those who embrace it are racist. You're talking about, you're using the words white people to talk about a group of people. That's in itself racist. And also, you're squashing the rights of freedom of speech of all of those people, including Native American students and other Native Americans, who are proud of the mascot and the logo.
So the first part of that question, there is no such thing as reverse racism. I don't care how many white people feel offended by that term. No amount of me saying white people is going to take them out of their position of power. No amount of me saying white people and being angry at white people, And I'm not talking about all white people. When I say white people, I think what most of us minorities mean are the ones that are oppressing us or that continue to perpetuate oppression onto us. I don't have a position of power. I can't take anything away from European Americans, Caucasians, whatever you want to call them. The people who are in power are the only ones who can truly act as racists, because they're actually, the whole act of racism is an institutionalized idea. You make another group of people feel powerless. You oppress them to the point where they don't feel like they can participate in society as a people. You dehumanize them. No matter how many times I say white people, I'm not taking power from white people. I'm not dehumanizing them. I consider them human beings just like I consider everybody else human beings. The reason why we use that term is probably the same reason why they can't tell the difference between a Dakota woman, an Anishinaabe woman, Ojibwe woman, a Haradza woman, because what we do as human beings is we generalize. And unfortunately, that in there lies part of the problem, is that we don't appreciate the uniqueness of each individual. As far as freedom of speech goes, I'm all about freedom of speech. If they're going to go ahead and post things like that, I'm not telling them they have to take it down. But you know darn well I'm going to say something about it, because just as much as they have a freedom of speech, I have freedom of speech to say something about it and to stand up for myself and to tell you how you're making me feel. Whether you like my feelings, whether you think my feelings are justified, whether you, you know, acknowledge my feelings or not, I have the right to speak my mind just as much as they have the right to speak their mind. We didn't ask them to take that banner down. We didn't make them take that banner down. It was social media attention that they were getting and that the university was getting and that their national chapter didn't appreciate that made them take it down. So as far as, you know, me trying to squash their freedom of speech, that wasn't my intention at all. I was just bringing awareness to this community that that type of activity was going on. So I hope I answered both of those questions, but that's sort of how I feel is, sure, if you want to hide behind freedom of speech to go ahead and make your point or to feel free to say whatever you want to say, then realize that there are consequences for your actions and that there are counteractions for your actions and that other people have freedom of speech as well, and they can say whatever they want about how they feel about something that you did. So you have to own responsibility for your actions.
Exactly. Agree. I have one last question. It's kind of a funny question. I think it's funny because we kind of have a standing joke in our house that people always bring up, what about the Irish? What about the Irish? What about the Irish? And so, and it did come up. It came up so much on television. I'm sure you heard Chris Berg talk about that. I think he talked about it again today. A lot of people wrote in comments about that on the radio show, on the threads that people were talking on social media. In step with that, the use of the Seminole. And people talked about this as, one, the Fighting Irish, isn't that also racist? Do you think that's racist too? Do you think that that's wrong? Do we have to get rid of that too? And what about the Seminole? They're totally cool with it. If they're cool with it, how come all y'all can't be cool with it?
Right.
What's your problem?
We've heard a lot of the, well, at least here in this area, because we have so many Norwegians, the Vikings are brought up as the example that people aren't offended by the Vikings. So.
Exactly. Also, yes. So what do you have to say to this? Talk about that.
Sure. This argument's always brought up whenever we tell people that we find the Fighting Sioux offensive. You know, if Irish people want to fight Notre Dame about their logo, they have every right to. But since they haven't and they don't feel offended by it, that's their choice. That's their opinion. That's what they feel. The same thing with the Seminoles. I think people forget that in the United States, there are over 566 federally recognized tribes. Each tribe is a nation. They have their own sovereignty. They can choose whether or not they're offended or not offended by something. Now, with the Seminoles case, we know that there's money tied to that, that the tribe receives. There's scholarships tied to that. And so what UND tried to do a few years back to try to match what the Seminoles were doing to try to gain favor was that they started trying to offer a Sioux scholarship for any Native American students from that were enrolled members of Spirit Lake or Standing Rock, which, I mean, just brought up a whole new can of worms, because now you're discriminating against different tribal nations and giving an advantage to the ones that you want to get some favor with. And so I don't know if that scholarship still exists, but I know that it was not as big of a success as they thought it was going to be, and it certainly didn't get them the favor that they were expecting to get from the Sioux nations that reside within North Dakota. As far as Vikings go, it's my understanding that there aren't people who still practice the Viking culture. If they do, I'm not trying to offend them, but if they have a problem, they can take that up with the Vikings. The issue here is that people try to compare this particular situation with situations that are happening all over the country, and this particular situation is unique to this culture of this particular area. People want to forget about the history of the United States with tribal nations, and the fact that even though they say that we're sovereign and that can act as independent nations, they have a lot of things that keep us from being able to actually exercise true sovereignty. And so here in North Dakota especially, the largest minority population is American Indians. There's people on both sides of the table, but the ones who are against it are strongly against it because they really truly do understand the history of this country, in particular this state with Native nations. They understand the issues that continue to happen between the tribal nations within North Dakota, and they also understand that they have their own identity. They're fine with not having a university memorialize them. We're not dead. We're living people. We have our own nations. We're proud of the kind of people that we are. We're not perfect, but we don't need a university to take on our legacy, as they like to try to tell other people that if the logo goes away, then people will forget about Native Americans. Well, I'm pretty sure people already have forgotten about us, and no amount of having the logo has managed to bring anybody else to Time Out Week or the Wachipi that matter. There's this lack of understanding still. I don't see how the logo has ever brought more understanding for Native Americans and their struggles. I don't see how it's benefited Native Americans in any way. So for us, that logo doesn't represent what all the nice Norwegian folk that live around here want to think that they're doing for us. They really like to try to martyr themselves as being our saviors, and that by having this logo, it's somehow saving us from extinction. And we're proud nations. We don't need anybody to save us. We're saving ourselves. And having a logo, that's not the way that I want to be represented, and the people that I know that do not support the logo feel the same way.
Wow. Amazing. Thank you for your insightful and in-depth and passionate discussion about this issue. I think for those listeners that take the time to really dig deeper and listen to the Native voices that I've interviewed today, they're going to have a much better understanding of what's really happening at UND and the story behind the story. I want to give you an opportunity to tell us where people can find your nonprofit online and any other work that you're doing. Go ahead and tell us where people can find out what's going on or any projects that you have that are important to you right now.
Right. So North Star Council actually is a very small nonprofit, and we have a Facebook page. So if you search us at North Star Council, our page should show up. That's usually where we post most of our information. We do have a website. I believe it's northstarcouncil.com. We try to keep that updated, but we've had some turnover of board members and staff members. But really what we try to do is to educate this community and to also provide a support system for the Native American individuals and families that live within the Grand Forks area. We work closely with the Grand Forks Public Schools in trying to bring some cultural awareness, trying to bring some more Native American programming. We also reach out to the university and provide some cultural programming for them as well. Our particular group is the one that's in charge of the Sweat Lodge that's just outside of town by the Buffalo Ranch. And so people are welcome. There's anybody is welcome to come to Sweat. And we usually announce when we're going to go out there either through the Facebook page or if we have your email address or your cell phone number, let you know that we're going out there. And unfortunately right now that's not something that we can do because everything's melting and we have a pretty big muddy mess out there. So once it dries up, we'll probably resume Sweat Lodge. And we do a few other things within the community. We do beating night and drum night. We especially focus on youth right now because we want them to feel proud about who they are. We want them to be able to have an identity, even though they're away from their home reservations or they may have never even had the opportunity to interact with other Native Americans. We are in the midst of trying to revitalize a dance club so that students can learn how to dance. We have several college students who are participating in that particular program and are going to be teaching the younger students how to dance. And then our hopes are that we can get some money together to help them make their own regalia and then, of course, be able to put on presentations and performances around the community to help educate. Because, unfortunately, everybody really wants us to always come and dance rather than just come in and talk about who we are and what we do and the history of our people. So those are just some of the projects that we're doing. And like I said, we partner up with UNDIA and the Indian Studies Association, American Indian Science and Engineering Society, and do lots of different projects right here in the Grand Forks community.
Very cool. Thank you so much for all your work, for the work of your organization, and in particular tonight for spending the time to give me this interview.
You're listening to KPPPLP-FM, broadcasting online through Live 365 and soon to be found on your radio dial at FM 88.1, adding local color to your airwaves. You're listening to interviews taken in April of 2014 that centered around the real story behind the UND sorority scandal. These are Native perspectives, so we're playing them again because they pertain to what's going on today. Have a listen.
Danny Miller, and Danny is a senior at UND. She's majoring in communications, Indian studies, with a minor in fine arts. She's also part of the McNair program, which is conducting research on retention of Native American college students. And she's an enrolled member in the Sisseton Wahpeton tribe in South Dakota. Danny, I just want to start off by asking you some questions about this controversy on UND's campus, which you are a student at, correct?
Yes. I'm a senior here at UND, and I'm in the Indian Studies Association.
So I know that you've also been doing some speaking about this issue this week specifically. Can you talk a little bit about that?
All right. Are you referring to on Twitter?
I was also referring to your presentation that you did today. And
All right. Well, these issues are things that I am really passionate about. Like, I've been writing articles for Lateral Indians, as you know, for a while, addressing just, like, issues like cultural appropriation and stereotypes and Native mascots. And basically my presentation today for Time Out Week was titled #NotYourStereotype. And it was basically like a compilation of everything that relates to Native Americans being stereotyped. I talked about where the stereotypes originate from, why they happen, the different types of stereotypes there are relating to Native men and women. And then I went into more specific subjects like cultural appropriation and Native mascots. And then I touched a little bit on the events which have been happening on the UND campus recently, and there was a great discussion on that.
Now, just for those of the listeners that don't know what Time Out Week is, could you please explain that?
All right. Well, Timeout Week is an annual event that we have here at UND every year. It's been going on for over 40 years now. And basically, it's a bunch of lectures and cultural events that take place each semester. Anyone can attend the events. They're all free. You basically can just see lecturers talk about Native issues, or like there's workshops sometimes. And then there's the powwow, which that's technically hosted by UNDIA, the other Native organization, but we work with them to promote the powwow since it's the weekend after Timeout Week.
And, you know, what's the significance of having Timeout Week on campus, especially for Native American students?
Well, as a Native American student myself, Timeout Week has always been the highlight of my experience in college. Even before I was taking Indian Studies classes, I started going to Timeout Week because I was offered extra credit. And once I got there, I started realizing how much these events and lectures related to me and the issues that I face and Indian country faces. And it was then that I realized how valuable it was to me and how I wanted to be more involved with it. But I also like to point out that Timeout Week isn't just valuable to Native students. I think it's valuable to non-Native students as well, because they can learn about these issues and things. And it just provides a space where everyone can be connected and have these discussions and feel open to talk about these things.
And how well are they received? Do you have good attendance? Is this something that you feel is really making an impact?
Honestly, we have not been receiving the attendance that we've hoped for. Like, normally, of course, we know that all the Native students and the Native orgs are always in attendance to these events. But unfortunately, like, there's not a lot of support from other non-Native organizations on campus. The non-Native students that attend usually are some that are interested in the content, but others are mostly in it for extra credit and things of that sort. But, no, we've spoken to Student Senate and other people who give us our funds, and we've asked them before, how many of you have actually attended our powwow or our Timeout Week event? And one person raised their hand when asked that question.
So would it be fair to say that your impression of, you know, having these events, and Timeout Week is very important, but the majority of non-Native students, are they really participating? I think that I'm hearing you say that that's something that still needs to happen on campus.
Yeah, definitely. It is something that needs to happen. Unfortunately, I feel like a lot of non-Native students treat Timeout Week as if it's a nuisance for them. Like, the people who we have to go to for funding and other things, that's how they look at it, which is really disappointing. And basically my feeling on it is I don't see how they can turn away our events when they've never even attempted to be involved or even attend once.
So tell me, in relation to this banner that was posted by the UND sorority during Timeout Week,
mm-hmm.
what significance did that have to you as a UND student that is a Native student and to other Native students there?
Well, honestly, I was very angry when I saw that it happened. It didn't help that before I saw the picture of the banner, I saw a picture of a past incident in 2008 when the students from that very same sorority, Gamma Phi Beta, threw a Cowboys and Indians party, and two of the students were dressed up in the worst display of red face I've ever seen, I believe. And when I saw that, immediately I was angry. And then right after people posted a banner and said, look, this was hanging up. And at that point, I was just in disbelief because the sorority is right next door to our American Indian Student Services. And the fact that they deliberately waited until timeout week to post such a banner, I felt like they were trying to send a message to us or something. And when we have other hashtags like Roll Tribe is one that students in support of Native mascots are supporting. We have these hashtags and these Facebook groups like NODAC Nation, plenty more, where they go on there and they openly post about how much they love the Fighting Sioux logo and it should have never been changed. And a lot of it evolves into other nasty racist comments or things, especially if they're challenged. But it was just really disappointing that it even happened in the first place. It was disappointing for me and all my classmates.
Now, and what kind of a climate does that create for you and your classmates in the school?
That creates a divisive and a hostile climate. It creates tension. Like, there's already been tension ever since the mascot was retired. If you walk in a classroom and people can tell that you're Native, you can just sense it. Or if you bring up the fact that you're Native, immediately everyone wants to ask you, how do you feel about mascot? Why are you for or against it? And it's like the spotlight is on you. And it's just constant tension going on. And honestly, when I see people doing these things, I can't say that I feel safe in that type of an environment. I don't know what's going to happen with those who disagree, and I've heard about incidents of harassment and violence inflicted upon Native students in the past who protested the logo. And so now I'm wondering, okay, are those who spoke out about this banner, are we going to have to worry about our safety now?
I really appreciate you sharing that. I think it's very hard for a lot of people to understand that side, that perspective. And I'm going to ask you some tough questions now, because for the most part, what I've heard in the local television and local radio about this discussion has been laced with that same type of racist commentary that you were discussing previously.
Yeah.
And I would like to try to address some of these things, you know, very honestly, from your perspective. First, one of the comments that is being made very widely is that this comment wasn't directed at Native Americans. It was actually directed at the NCAA, who were the people that made the logo and mascot go away.
Okay.
So anybody that's being offended by what's happening with this banner has a misplaced hurt, if you will. Well, how would you answer that?
Well, I'd say I don't agree with that. I mean, people always have to take it to a personal place to attack my character and say that I'm overly sensitive, I'm overly PC because I care about these issues. I don't believe that I'm overly sensitive because I want to be treated as a fellow equal human being, but I'd say that those people are more so just inconsiderate of the way these actions are harming other people. And I don't know, I think part of the stigma that comes from that is the lack of accountability that our institution is taking in this logo controversy. I mean, this was addressed in a meeting we had a couple days ago about the whole banner issue, and people were saying how the university never took the time to tell students why the Fighting Sioux logo was so offensive to Native students. They literally have not released one thing, and so when non-Natives think about the situation, that's exactly what they say is, well, we had to change the logo because the NAACP made us change it, not because they ever want to take the time to think about, well, why is this harmful to Native students?
Yes, I did notice that a lot of the people that were commenting really didn't know any of the history that, you know, dates back to the 1970s, really, when Native Nations were asking for this offensive logo and a mascot to be retired. But I wanted to ask you also, in terms of, you know, the merchandising and the jerseys, the hats, the, you know, there are some people that say, well, you know, if this has been deemed offensive, why are we not banning the use of all of this merchandising on campus and at events? What do you say to that?
Well, I think that's a very tough issue to speak on. You know, if anyone were to come forward and say, oh, let's ban this merchandise, that there would be a lot of backlash. A lot of people would be speaking out and saying that they feel that their freedom of expression, their First Amendment rights were being violated, which I would argue that they're violating other people's rights when they're dehumanizing them. But, yeah, I was talking about this today with another classmate, and he was telling me how it doesn't even seem like the mascot has been retired, because you go anywhere and literally the mascot is everywhere on everything. People have so much merchandise, and it's not going away. And I don't know, it's difficult. I don't know if the university would really be able to put those regulations on things, but I think it would help the situation. It would help put the mascot to rest if they were to take a step forward and put more regulations about things like that.
Okay, well, thank you very much for expressing that. I think, you know, the idea behind that question was partly that the university can ban certain things at events. You know, they can say, I don't know if you remember recently, somebody went to an event, a sporting event, and they were wearing a Ku Klux Klan outfit.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I heard about that.
So,
I actually know someone who experienced racism at that same school. Surprise.
Yeah, so you realize that when something like that happens, they can definitely ban that.
Yeah.
And well, the question really is, how different is that mascot and logo from the white supremacy of that that's represented by that white cap and gown?
Well, I'd say there's definitely an air of white supremacy and white privilege that comes with the mascot. I mean, you see it even with the way they posted the banner saying, you can take away our mascot, but you can't take away our pride. And then with this roll tribe hashtag, it's like they believe the Native identity is something that belongs to them, and that's coming from a place of privilege, I think. And when you consider the way privilege plays into marginalization and oppression, then yeah, it really isn't that different from like a Ku Klux Klan outfit.
It's something to ponder, isn't it? Now, here's something that I heard a lot today. There was a lot of supporters of the continuation of the logo and mascot. And they had two central arguments. One of them was that the university has honored the Sioux and respected the Sioux through the use of the mascot and the logo. Incidental to this claim is that there was a peace pipe ceremony in 1959, and that there was a vote at Spirit Lake, and that Standing Rock refused to vote because they simply knew it was going to pass overwhelmingly, that 70% of Natives support UND's use of the mascot and logo. And the second of which is that, hey, if Natives don't respect each other, Natives have in the past killed each other among nations. Natives have all of these social problems. They, you know, commit a lot of crimes. They have all of these addictions. So really, if they're not respecting themselves, why are they worthy of respect? How do you attack this two-pronged argument that, A, there's been lots of respect in the use of the mascot and logo, and B, that, hey, why are you asking for so much respect if you guys don't really, really respect yourself?
Well, I have to say the logo and mascot is not an honor, period. I mean, you look at what comes as a result of the mascot, and there's racism. You go to a game, you see people war whooping and putting on face paint and committing cultural appropriation. That's not an honor. You see enemy or rival schools coming to the games and making chants about smallpox blankets and things of that sort. That's not an honor at all. That is actually violence being perpetuated on the students. Yeah, even if the mascot did come from a place of honor back in the day, give them the benefit of the doubt and pretend that everyone completely agreed on that, that still doesn't change the way it's playing into our society today. These things evolve over time. Certain connotations change in the way people choose to associate themselves with these things. I mean, even I, before I came to UND, I used to think that the Fighting Sioux was an honor just because I was like, oh, I'm Sioux, that's cool, like Fighting Sioux, okay. But then I came to UND and I started experiencing the racism that comes as a result of the mascot. And that was when I thought, well, maybe I need to reconsider this because I don't like how the mascot is bringing this racism into my life, and maybe it's not something that I support. And as I learned more about Indian studies, too, and got educated on all historical issues of the past, and I started seeing how that plays out within institutions and through control mechanisms like Native mascots, then I realized that this is an issue bigger than us. This is an issue that's bigger than a sports fan. I need to have an identity through a Native mascot. Like, this is actually having tangible effects on Native Americans' lives, on all aspects of the bigger issues that people like to bring up. And when it comes to you don't respect yourself, so you're not worthy of respect, I can say most people that say that type of thing are probably completely ignorant of Native Americans, have never been to reservations in their life, and are talking from a place of complete ignorance. But even if we were to bring up the issues that Native Americans face, that does not give anybody the right to continue to exploit them or dehumanize them. Okay, so they have issues because of how things played out historically and the way treaties weren't honored. But that doesn't mean they don't deserve to be treated like fellow human beings.
Well put. Very well put. Thank you for saying that. I want to ask you a little bit deeper about, you know, you commented that when you were first a student, and I'm another one of the people that I'm going to be interviewing for this podcast is Jordan Breen, and his cousin was actually the artist that created, that drew the mascot and logo. And he was talking about how he does not support its use, how he once
he
felt like
support
you.
What?
He does not support its use. And he said he's an Anishinaabe. I can't remember. Anyway, he said he knows that, you know, he told me that he knows that Sioux is a name that was given by the Chippewa, and that he knows that it was meant in a derogatory way.
Yep.
And You know, he was talking about an understanding that he grew to have about how this mascot and logo is used to denigrate him and all Native American people.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, because, you know, there was a lot of Native American people that were talking about this issue, and they were saying, we've got bigger things to think about. We've got bigger problems. This is not one of them. Stop talking about this problem. Hey, I think the Sioux logo is great, and everyone in my family thinks it's great, too. We all have the gear, and we wear it proudly. And lots of people, most of the people that I know that are Native American agree with me, and I'm Native American, so I approve of this message. What kind of a response or a message do you have for people that rely on those people as a sign that, see everybody, it's okay. All these natives say it's okay.
To that, I say that's no excuse for you to use natives in such a way. Like, tokenism is another form of racism as well, to only respect a certain portion of a marginalized group or a minority because that's the perspective that you want to be represented. Like, that's tokenism. And so that doesn't excuse you from perpetuating racism either. And also, one group of natives does not represent all natives. There's over 500 different tribes. So you can't tell me that a small portion of them represents everyone. And, like, we're not the same. I understand, like, I have friends who are in support of the logo, and we agree to disagree on these issues. And, like, I understand they may never agree with me, but that's just a matter of what it is. We're not a hive mind. We all don't think the same, and no one should imply that we all should think the same or be represented by one spokesperson. And I know that they might flip that argument on me and say, well, only a certain amount of you are anti-mascot, so you don't represent everyone either. And yeah, that is the case, but the difference between my opinion and theirs is that my opinion is not dehumanizing or marginalizing everyone.
Very good point. Very good point. Now, to add to that point, I want to go back to a previous comment that we were discussing about free speech. You brought it up. You said people feel that they have the right to free speech, but I would argue that they are harming other people's rights, human rights, you said, I believe. Now, this argument about free speech and opinions has also come up innumerable times. And one of the main arguments is that about this issue about the mascot, about this issue about its effects on Native populations, its impact, we'll just have to agree to disagree. And because people have the freedom to say what they want, they have the freedom to express their views, even if those views are, in your opinion, racist, discriminatory, or derogatory. How do you answer that?
Well, I'd say the free speech rebuttal gets thrown around way too much. People think that free speech means that they can permit racism or other hurtful things, but it doesn't. Like, fact of the matter is, free speech gives you a basis on which you can say whatever you want, but free speech does not mean that you do not face consequences for what you choose to say or perpetuate. So if someone is going around pushing racism, using Native mascots as an outlet to basically promote racism or hate crimes and things, then free speech doesn't excuse them from that. Like, free speech gave them the ability to commit those racist actions, but now they're going to face the consequences for the actions that they chose to do.
Yeah, and this is something that, to go a little bit off topic, it's also been very hotly debated in cases like Hobby Lobby and cases like Mozilla using pressure from the community affected by discrimination to boycott or sanction a group for their discrimination. And a lot of people are calling that bullying. Bullying.
Bullying what? Bullying? Wow.
Yes, they're calling it bullying. They say that this is like some kind of fascism that's imposed thought control, that you have to be PC, otherwise you will be punished. And so in terms of this discussion, the fact that some people are calling for the sorority and the individuals that participated in this banner to have some kind of consequences further than just sensitivity training. This is bullying. It's trying to push this new thought agenda. What do you say about that?
Well, many of those who did say that they should get other consequences besides cultural sensitivity, they have reasoning for that. The individuals who happened to say that at the meeting I attended with student affairs and other faculty, the reasoning they said that was because they've been dealing with these incidents time after time again for years and years and years. Like, I'm talking decades, and they've had plenty of these meetings with faculty over the same issues, and that's always the same answer to the problem. They would say, okay, well, let's solve this by punishing them and making them get into cultural sensitivity. And that's when you have to question, if these incidents keep occurring, is cultural sensitivity the only answer? Is it even effective? But at the same
time,
that's
a very good question. I would like you to tell me from your own perspective, is the response of let's slap some cultural sensitivity on it, what effect have you seen that have in other incidences, even if unrelated to this particular topic, but cultural appropriation or a racist slur, whatever? How effective has that been in your opinion?
I don't think it's always effective. Oftentimes it happens to be just the blanket statement, just like when appropriation or anything else happens, people do it, and then they know that they're not going to have any consequences except cultural sensitivity at the most, and so they do it and give that blanket apology, get through with the cultural sensitivity, and once it's over and done with, and it's just in one ear and out the other. I guess part of the issue with that is it has to do with the individual. If the individual doesn't want to be involved and be present with that cultural sensitivity, then it's not going to have any effect on them. They can choose to completely let it go in one ear and out the other.
Yeah, totally. Okay, now I have a sort of a silly question. I think it's silly because I say that it's silly because one of the standing jokes around my house is that what about the Irish? This is something. Do you get the joke? Oh, my God.
I've heard a lot of people say that.
My daughter actually created a little rap. She says, "What about the Irish? What about the Irish? What about the Irish?" Who gives a flip?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. But I have to ask, because it came up so many times. It was probably one of the most discussed issues that I've seen as I was combing the internet and the social media on this topic. And it was, what about the Fighting Irish? And also, what about the Seminole? What about the Seminole? And if that's okay, then why isn't it all okay? I know you probably have heard this topic a million times, but I would like you to respond to it, if you would.
Oh, no problem. The Fighting Irish issue, like, that's comparing apples to oranges. You can't say that the Irish are the same as Native Americans. They have different histories, different cultural interactions with dominant white culture. And, yes, the Irish did have their struggles, too. They dealt with some oppression back in their day. But that doesn't give them a free pass to perpetuate oppression against Native Americans. Like, oh, because we have the Fighting Irish, and that means that we can make you into the character. No, that doesn't give you a free pass. And also, I would like to say that the Choctaw gave the Irish money during the potato famine. And so Native Americans have always been supportive of Irish people's oppression and their struggles. And so why can't they be conducive and do the same for us by respecting our wishes not to be dehumanized or treated as a caricature?
I did not know that.
I only found out last year, and ever since I'm like, nope, now people really don't have an excuse. But
right.
No, and then what was the second part of the question? The Seminoles.
Yes, the Seminoles.
Oh, I rue the conversation about the Seminoles, but I think that just goes back to the other conversation I was having and saying that we aren't all the same. Just because the Seminoles might have a good relationship with their logo and approve it doesn't mean that the Sioux or any other tribe for that matter is approving these mascots and want to be dehumanized. And to say that we should because they do, then that's just making us a monolith, and that's racism in itself in my eyes.
That's very interesting, you know, because one of the things that was being discussed about the Seminole was that they, you know, they fund all sorts of things for the tribes, and there was a cross conversation about the fact that so does UND, you know, like, basically if you're Native American, you can go to college for free. Everybody can.
Nope, that's a lie.
There's this idea. That, and also, you know, Native Americans get everything for free and get all this money for just being Native American. So, you know, there's a give and a take, right?
Yeah. No, that was what I heard during the mascot controversy. Whenever I'd go on Facebook or anything else, immediately that's the type of comments I'd see. Well, Natives all go to school for free, so they can't complain. And I'm just thinking, oh, I have student loans, and I know plenty of other Natives who are paying for their own school, so I don't know where this is coming from at all, but I don't know why it always has to come back to that. What does that have to do with not wanting to be made into a caricature? I don't understand. And, yeah, I don't know. People make these assertions on no factual basis at all. It's just pure racist views that they've been raised to have. And it doesn't always come from people who are flaming racist or anything of that matter. I mean, I had some good friends that were non-Native that waited until we were really good friends and everything. They're comfortable with me. And then years later down the line, they bring up these stereotypes and say things to me like, oh, you know, other natives that I've been around take handouts from the government and they tend to be alcoholics. And I would just be in shock. I'm like, you would say something like this to me and I'm supposed to be your friend. But that just goes to show how pervasive this is and how ingrained it is into our state culture that these children are brought up with these prejudices, and it's really difficult to eradicate later in life.
Well, I'm going to ask you an even more difficult question, because I was having a very interesting conversation today with one of the television people that I work with, and we were talking about, you know, the issue of just talking about this issue from the perspective of white people and how, you know, best intentions, there was all these good intentions, and boy, that artwork on the new mascot was great, wasn't it? I mean, you have to appreciate that, right? And there's all these handouts given to the Native Americans, so they should be appreciative of this. And so we were having this conversation, and I brought up, you know, some of the obvious things like the centuries of genocide and land theft and, you know, and how that might impact generations of people. And we quickly jumped to the question of, or he quickly jumped to the question of, so how do we fix it? That's an interesting question, because I've heard this when I've had discussions with people about a racialized society and how we deal with this type of aggression, oppression. How do we fix it? It's always been something that's perplexed me that when we're having a discussion, people quickly jump to that question, how do we fix it, as if there were a singular answer that in the next 30 seconds you could give me that will just fix it, and you're the only person that can.
Yeah.
But I'm going to ask you that question anyhow, giving you that background, because I'd like to know, not necessarily how do we fix it, but what do we do to begin? What needs to happen?
Well, I'd say what needs to happen is people need to be more open-minded in general. There's so many people that are so headstrong to jump on anyone who criticizes things and say, oh, it's so PC, like, I don't want to talk about genocide, it's already done and over with, like, we should just move on. And I think that that's what the issue is, that people don't want to address the issue, and because they're afraid to address it because it makes them feel guilty, it makes them feel uncomfortable, and it makes them say, oh, well, I'm not guilty for what my ancestors did. No one is blaming you for what your ancestors did, but how are we ever going to move forward and heal from this history of our ancestors and the way white people and natives have worked and had interactions? How are we ever going to move forward from that if we can never cope and acknowledge that these events actually did happen?
That was almost exactly my answer, the person I was talking to. But the response I got was this, is also interesting. I don't even know if I'm going to use this part of our interview, but I just wanted to pick your brain about it. The response was immediate. Well, I don't like the idea of having to think about this history from my point of view as a white man through history interacting with, insert, minority group, Native Americans, blacks, whatever. Because that just means I have to feel guilty. And then what am I supposed to do? Pay reparations? And, my response to that was, no, we have to start somewhere, though. I mean, the question I have for you is, why is it critical for us to look at history? Because this is something I think that people, they balk at it because, hey, you're not talking to an ignoramus. Many of the people you're talking to are college educated, and they went to history.
Yeah.
They went, they already, they know, don't they? Don't they already know?
Yeah. They should.
Don't they already know enough about the struggle of Native Americans in this country? Why do they have to rehash this stuff? The question is, do they really know?
Yeah, no, they don't. That's the problem. Our education system is flawed.
Because that's a central question, because, I mean, one of the things, like, growing up with my own children, you know, they would come home with their Thanksgiving assignment. And
I was just thinking about that.
When I told them about the real Thanksgiving, there was tears, there was crying, there was horror and shock, and there was a reaction of, why did you spoil Thanksgiving for me?
Hmm.
And I think that same reaction is out there. Like, why do we have to talk about these things when I already know about them? The question, again, I say, is, do people really know?
They don't at all. They get taught these false mythologies in school. For example, the Thanksgiving Day myth, or the fact that supposedly Christopher Columbus discovered America and he's this hero, but we're never taught about any of the other atrocities that he committed. I mean, as a student who grew up in Maryland, that's where, again, I say I know both sides of the coin, and I know for a fact that the schools that I went to, I did not learn about these issues. The only Native people that I ever learned about in school was Pocahontas and Tecumseh, and I didn't even learn about Tecumseh until I was in AP U.S. History. But other than that, no, we never – oh, yeah, now we learned about the French and Indian War, and that was to the extent of what I learned about Native Americans. So when I came to college and I actually took Indian Studies courses, that was a bit of a culture shock for me to figure out that, wow, like, everything I've been taught basically is a lie. But a lot of people aren't willing to face that because they don't want to be uncomfortable and they don't want to be guilty and they don't want to believe that this wonderful country that everyone is so patriotic for and everything, they don't want to believe that it was built on such atrocities as genocide.
Cognitive dissonance.
Yes, exactly. And I don't know, and to that I say, like, we have to learn about our history. Like, if we don't, like, I know it's cliche to say, but things will be repeated if you don't learn about what happened in history. And also, like, so many people wonder why cultural appropriation is so problematic and all these other things, like, why are Natives offended? Well, they don't realize where we're coming from when we actually know our history and the way whites have interacted with us and things. We see the root of those problems. And because they only see the surface of that, then they don't realize how their little actions are acting upon events that have been going on for centuries.
I want to talk a little bit about building relationships real quick.
Okay.
Building relationships is, I believe it's essential across race lines, across indigenous people, throughout different countries on this continent. And I think Idle No More has really brought a lot of indigenous nations together. The reason I say this is because in having these discussions, I think that there's an understanding that it is essential also to integrate all of our white brothers and sisters into the conversation, because we're all relative, and in order to move together in a society that works together, we have to respect each other.
Mm-hmm.
We have to love each other, and we have to talk to each other. And I'm going to share something that you don't know about me, but I'm married to a white man. And one of the interesting
things... Well, the father of my children is a white man, so I get that.
But this is something that, you know, it's something that we talk about all the time. There's not a day that does not go by where we don't discuss how race plays into everything that surrounds us, because it's there. And we acknowledge it, and we talk about it openly. And in discussing these issues that we're talking about, like today's issue, and any other issues that relate to culture and race, the conversation seems to get deadlocked, where people become afraid, like we were just talking about, where people become hurt, their patriotic sensibilities or their heritage sensibilities or their pride in their white selves, or all of these things seem to come up. And there's this wall that divides us that we need to break through on both sides in order to be able to create a working society, right? So
yeah.
When I have these discussions with other people and people say to me, why are we going to have this discussion about race? That's just going to make me feel guilty, and I don't need to feel guilty. I don't need to have these discussions because I know I'm a good person. I've done a lot of things for Native American people. I've done a lot of things for you people. So I'm secure. I don't need to be lectured. I don't need to be told. One of the things that comes to my mind is personal relationships play a big role in our being able to communicate and be trusted when we say that something is hurting us, that something is harming our communities, and for that to be heard and for that to be respected on its face value, right?
Yeah.
So I want to ask you, in that discussion with our white brothers and sisters, because I think that the oppression and the degradation of other humans has its impact both on the oppressor and on the oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
Would you speak to that? I think it's important for people to hear not only how it affects you, but how does it affect the people that oppress you? And why do we need to have this conversation in a deeper, more cooperative way?
Okay, well, first of all, I have to say those people who don't want to talk about these things because they feel guilty and they don't believe, they perpetuate these things, they're a good person and whatever. That type of mindset is a privileged mindset, and that's a fact. That's white privilege, to be able to live day to day and not have to think about race, because minorities and marginalized groups, that's our reality. We don't have the choice to say, this is something that I don't want to think about because it makes me feel bad. No, like, we're confronted with these situations every day, and we just have to deal with them the best way that we can. So that's disappointing when I see that a white person can just shut themselves out of the conversation in such a way because it's something that they don't have to deal with. And am I saying that they're bad because they have white privilege? No. A lot of people take that as a personal attack, but it's the fact of the matter that it is what it is. I mean, myself, I'm not full blood, so I could say I have privilege as well. I can acknowledge that I have privilege, and I'll do that if I have to, if that means helping other oppressed groups or not perpetuating marginalization. And I think that would help if a lot more people would be willing to recognize that. I mean, I have a lot of white allies, friends, and they willingly anytime will say, like, I have white privilege, I acknowledge it. Okay, now let's move forward. How can I help you? And that's the extent of what it is. And then I also want to say, in regards to other ways people feel attacked, they think that when you call something out, that immediately that you're calling them a racist, and they get really defensive. They say, I'm not racist. And that's an issue too. Like, we're not saying that you're racist. Like, you don't have to be racist to make a mistake and do something that is racist. You can have completely good intentions and still harm others by doing something that's racist. What differentiates you from those people who actually are racist is how you try to handle those types of situations. Are you going to do what you can to apologize and say, okay, now how can I make things right, and how can I prevent doing such problematic things in the future? And that's how they can move forward from that. But moving from that conversation, I do agree that we need more integration of our white brothers and sisters on these conversations. As someone who is all about intersectionality, I believe everyone, every human being should be concerned with any human issue. And that's where race should transcend all of our biases. And yeah, I mean, it would only benefit us to have more allies and to allow more people into our conversations. But that's going to take work on both sides. It's going to take work from white people to acknowledge their privilege and do what they can to help. And it's also going to take work from those natives who, or any marginalized group who may feel closed off from allowing white people into the conversation.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. And it's tough on both sides to start to have that trust to allow those conversations to begin. But I think we made a good start today, and I thank you, Dani, because you were amazingly insightful for your young age, and amazing. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
You have been listening to a KPPPFM.com podcast. Thank you for your time and support. Keep connected to KPPPFM.com for future programs, announcements, and activities that will lead to the building of Fargo-Moorhead's newest community-owned and operated non-commercial low-power FM radio station. KPPPLP-FM. 88.1 on your dial, adding local color to your airwaves.